CMC Markets is one of the world's leading CFD and spread betting providers with more than three decades of experience. Trade with CMC and you're trading with experts. 79% of retail investor accounts lose money.
Hello and welcome to the City View, the podcast from City AM in partnership with CMC Markets. Join me, Christian May, each week as I talk to insiders, industry chiefs and leading figures from business, finance, politics and the media. My guest today is John Williams, CEO of the Institute of Leadership and Management, which recently marked International Leadership Week with an online conference bringing together experts from across the world to discuss the attributes, skills, knowledge, and approaches of successful and effective leaders during a period of extraordinary change and disruption. John joined the Institute in September after a career in which he held senior leadership positions at the Agile Business Consortium, Santander, and the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants. The Institute of Leadership and Management was founded 70 years ago and today represents more than 40,000 professionals. John, welcome to the City View.
Hello, Christian. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, you've just concluded International Leadership Week, and if you look back to this time last year, just wrapping up the 2019 conference, it must seem like a world away. Everything has changed, our economies, our social behaviour, the way we work, of course. So if you're able to distill it for us, can you tell us what the mark of a good leader will have been this year, given all we've faced?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, a year on from the last International Leadership Week, it's almost unrecognizable, the political and economic and social situation we find ourselves in now. And I think if I distill it concisely and say the mark of a good leader over the last year has been, and it's a much overused word, agility. And if I can just explain a little bit what I mean by that. When we talk about business agility, very often people think about a methodology. We've learned how to be agile, or they think it's a mindset. We need to be agile in our thinking. But actually, it is just a behavior. And what I've seen from the way that people have become leaders over the course of the last 12 months is that leadership behavior, that agile behavior, the ability to sense and then quickly respond, to adapt to what's happening in the marketplace, to be able actually to predict and not very far ahead, but to predict and to prepare for what's coming. Those are the characteristics of business agility. What is, if I might add something, what is most evident to me is that we've seen this happening in all manner of people at all levels in organizations. And the theme of International Leadership Week just last week was leadership everywhere. We are all leaders now. And I think one of the things that's emerged over the past 12 months is that leadership is no longer a boardroom role. It's no longer a boardroom responsibility. Leadership actually is being taken by people at every level, particularly those who are facing customers who demand rapid response from organizations in the context in which we work. So those two things, I think, really, agility espoused by leadership and the fact that that leadership has suddenly become much more numerous and much more widespread in organizations.
Let's pick up on those two things, because one seems to be, or the latter seems to be, a more cultural shift, and the former is about the speed at which organizations of all sizes have had to adapt to this pandemic, to this crisis, and there are plenty of other things going on as well. And the speed has been such that it's really left us with very little time to even stop and think. And you mentioned there that your conference was headlined, "We're All Leaders Now." And I suppose that reflects the fact that it's not just a case of saying that no business, no organization has been untouched by this crisis, but no individual. And in fact, people's home lives and working lives have collided. Everybody has had to show a greater degree of understanding to adapt to people's circumstances, and that's going to be with us for some time. So it really has touched everybody, hasn't it, at every level, regardless of where you are in the chain, I suppose.
That's absolutely right. And I think this is the reason why this leadership everywhere has emerged as a almost a syndrome, really, in society. You're right. It's a cultural, I think I would call it an allowance of cultural change rather than a deliberate cultural change. Because this requirement to suddenly be decisive at every level in organizations was forced upon us, we had no choice. And what has happened is that organizations have had to allow people who would normally have to refer to somebody else for a decision, organizations have had to allow them to make those decisions, because otherwise, because this has affected each of us individually, customers have said, if you can't respond to me fast enough, I need to go somewhere that can. So this has become diffused throughout organizations as a cultural shift, exactly as you described it, Christian. And I think not before time. And what is interesting, there's a phrase in, I think it's in biology, punctuated equilibrium, which basically means whereas Darwin said organisms will iterate development, punctuated equilibrium says, no, actually, organisms stay exactly the same as they always were until a crisis happens. And then a very small percentage of them will survive that crisis and the others will die out. And that is not dissimilar to what's happening here. A very small percentage of business models have survived what's happened to us over the past 12 months. Most of the business models that previously existed will change and will die out over the next 5 to 10 years. And I think the, for example, when organizations have said, we're no longer going to ask our people to come back and work in the office, that might not be universal. However, there's not much doubt that there is a shift now in the attitude of workers, employees, as to whether or not they really need to be in the same place all the time. So that cultural shift has been really, really fundamental, I think. The pace, the element of pace that's driven the business agility requirement, I think again, that arises out of the suddenness with which this pandemic took hold. And of course, the universality with which the pandemic took hold, because it wasn't possible for organizations or indeed individuals to say, this is happening over here, I don't really like that, I'm agile enough to go over there and actually get what I need. In actual fact, it was over there as well. So it was a different depth of agility, a different depth of resilience and response capability that was demanded by the suddenness of this. And I have to say, I'm unsurprised and in some ways absolutely delighted by the way that organizations have immediately become more agile. They have let go, in many cases, of the control that many organizations wanted to have and allowed their people to make themselves agile. One of the examples of that would be retail. And I'm thinking about supermarkets in particular now, rather than high street retail. Supermarkets have had a massively data-driven business model for a long time now. The inventors of loyalty cards, practically. And yet, when the pandemic decreed, when the lockdown decreed, people couldn't go to supermarkets, they needed to do something else. So they immediately, of course, began doing more and more online deliveries and stuff like that. However, that data-driven business model remained data-driven. It just started telling them different data. And actually now, one of the reasons why supermarkets have invested so deeply in recruiting new drivers, for example, for deliveries and stuff like this, is not just because it looks like the pandemic will last quite a long time. It is because they've been able to gauge from the depth of their data-driven business model just how profound the shift is in the way that people buy the things that people buy from them. So the agility has been driven at pace by the arrival of the pandemic.
On this point about cultural change, do you think, notwithstanding the fact that it's been forced upon companies and individuals as a result of this pandemic, of course, but do you think that the seeds of that were actually sown some time ago? Because you have had a sense in recent years that there's been a change in the way people think about leadership, which was once seen as the preserve of the executive level, the C-suite level. And in fact, actually, people have started to think about their organizations in a more collaborative sense, and you know, individuals coming to the fore rather than just worker bees taking direction. So whilst on the one hand, it's been a crisis that has clarified or even crystallized the way people think about how organizations are run and where decisions are taken, but the sort of cultural genesis of that has been on the cards for a few years.
Yeah, and there's a lovely phrase, and I can't remember who said it now, simplify, then exaggerate. Nico Colchester, I think it was. And basically, that's what this pandemic has done for that shift that you identified as already happening very slowly and steadily in the world of work and in society at large. And what we've seen is, because of the suddenness of the hit by the pandemic and by the lockdowns and the economic response, almost a democratization of leadership. Suddenly we are all leaders now because we have to be. This was already happening to a degree for probably two very important reasons, I think, really. One of them is the point that you identified, Christian, which is a very slow allowance of the realization that actually the cult hero, the hero leader, wasn't the most effective driver of output or indeed outcome for organizations. And there needed to be a great deal more diversity and inclusion. And I'm not just thinking about physical or visually evident diversity. Things like cognitive diversity in leadership teams was actually demonstrably producing better results. So there was evidence that becoming a bit more democratized in leadership was anyway useful. Of course, we did have a status quo, and we didn't then have a crisis. So there was much resistance to this shift, and we continue to see leadership teams who are, and I'll use the term in inverted commas, heroic, still seeking to take credit and to take command and control. Added to that slow shift that was happening anyway in society, we had the rise of what I guess would have been called millennials and now Gen Z. I was interested, I was talking to somebody the other day about the millennial generation. And he said, oh, yes, well, of course, they're all very young people, aren't they? And I had to explain, well, actually, millennials now, you know, are into their late 20s, late 30s in some cases. People we called millennials are now in middle and senior management roles. And they are people who already started demanding access, if I can call it that, to decision-making. And on a much more diffused and spread basis. So we had the internal drive from that generation, if you like, and of course the following generations, all of whom have seen some quite challenging results from the previous command and control structure, because to be perfectly honest, we have not demonstrated very well that command and control can provide prosperity for everybody. And certainly we have not seen that during the course of the last 12 months. And then we had that underlying shift anyway towards a democratization of leadership. Because there's if I think about a leadership's role, it is to manage the timeline of prosperity for an organization. I did, when I first thought of that phrase, I thought it's to manage the timeline to prosperity. But then that indicates that prosperity is a state that we can reach and stay at. But as actually, the normal course of events, of course, is up and down. We have peaks and troughs. We have variety and variation in everything. A leadership's job is to manage that variation such that the peaks and troughs will be as limited as optimal. And I think we are now seeing the demand for that kind of leadership resulting from that shift in culture and shift in requirement, I think, really, for performance. And it's about time, actually. I did a short piece of the Global Peter Drucker Forum the other day, and I said, we've been talking about leadership, and the same is true, of course, for our International Leadership Week. We've been talking about leadership for decades and how it should be better in this way or better in that way. And there comes a time, actually, when we need to stop talking about how to improve leadership and actually improve it. And Simon Sinek has this concept of why. Start with why. What's the purpose of what we want to do? And I would say, well, actually, we should reverse that and say, why not? We haven't got enough good leaders. Well, why not? Business schools are not producing the right kind of leaders. Why not, actually? It's time to stop saying, well, it's difficult, or it's not time yet. It's actually time to do stuff. And the pandemic, if there was any kind of silver lining in something as bad as that, it is that it has quite clearly said to us, stop talking, do something about this. And I don't see us reverting to the kind of universal leadership models of command and control that we saw right up until quite recently, actually. And I do see us seeing increasingly now this broad-based universality of leadership at every level and more opportunity being given to people to be leaders.
Of course, during this crisis, we've seen some extraordinary examples of leadership, or at least we've seen the effects of extraordinary leadership. If you think of the pharmaceutical companies having accelerated what would be multi-year processes into a few months in order to develop a vaccine, and I think it was the head of Pfizer or possibly AstraZeneca saying that he just basically swept aside all of the bureaucracy and many of the processes that would have been required if they were to have embarked on this process in peacetime. And he just wrote them a blank check and he just said to the scientists, do what you need to do. And actually, he very specifically kept government and various official channels out of the process completely because he said they didn't have the time for it. And we now know that they have been extraordinarily successful in their endeavours. So given that, and there will be other examples in different sectors and companies, some people will ask whether it ever makes sense to go back to the old way of doing things. And what do you think will be the enduring legacies of this period when it comes to leadership?
I think two questions there. The first one is, there are some things which actually don't change and shouldn't change when we think about going back to the old ways. Jeff Bezos said once, focus on the things in business that don't change. For example, consumers will always want lower prices and faster deliveries. So that's what Amazon focuses on. So there will be some elements of leadership, for example, motivation, support, reward. These are fundamental to leadership. At the same time, because of the demonstrations that we've had, as you just described, for example, in the pharmaceutical sector, where concepts of risk and even to a degree, concepts of compliance and the bureaucracy associated with both of those were pushed aside in order to say, actually, what's the minimum viable product here? What can we do rapidly that will do the job? And that kind of willingness and commitment is extremely rare at the top of organizations. However, the enduring legacy of what we've seen over the course of the last 12 months will be that more and more organizations will start to realize actually risk assessment and even compliance, or rather the bureaucracy that they attach to compliance, may well have been over-engineered. So risk assessment and even compliance or a bureaucracy associated with it may well have been over-engineered. And if that's the case, maybe it's time to start focusing on what's the simplest possible way to achieve the outcome that we want to achieve for our customers. Because I think the thing that characterized the success of the pharmaceutical sector is that completely unwavering focus on what do we need to do for the beneficiaries of this process.
Well, I think a lot of people listening would also suggest that that in particular is a lesson that can be learned not just across businesses, but in the public sector as well, especially if, as we assume the public finances are going to require slightly leaner budgets in the year ahead. And that brings me on to a final question, really, John, which is about political leadership, national leadership. We can't discuss leadership and the pandemic without touching on this. And I wonder whether you had found yourself perhaps watching politicians this year and thinking you haven't got a clue, or maybe you've come across examples of national leadership that for whatever reason you felt have risen to the challenge. How do you find yourself thinking about political leadership at the moment. It might not be part of your day job, but I'm sure professionally you'll have an interest in it. And it's certainly something which generates heated opinions across the country.
It certainly does. And I think everybody should have an interest in political leadership. And I think the last 12 months has told us why. Because political leadership is responsible in the long term, as well as immediately, for actually the not just the prosperity of the country, but actually how good it feels to live in a particular country. And I'm not talking solely about our own government. I'm talking about governments everywhere, almost everywhere around the country. We've seen a couple of good examples, New Zealand, for example, or in Scandinavia. However, I think there are lessons we can learn. I hate that phrase because it's very very public sector and political. There are lessons we can learn from the way that political leaders have performed over the last 12 months. And I would say that politics has not been exactly dysfunctional. It is that political energy has been, to a degree, misallocated. And of course, from a business perspective, the misallocation of capital, for example, is a well-known concept. Actually, the misallocation of attention or priorities is also a very well-known concept in business. And it is less accepted in politics, because politics doesn't have the obvious profitability imperative that business would have. There is more than one way to determine whether a political decision was a success. So we have had two things happen over the last 12 months. One is an inability for us to gauge in real time whether or not political decisions have been successful, because the outcomes will not be evident for some time. And secondly, a very challenging inability for political leaders to be able to make decisions based on, I'll call it, credible data, by which I mean real-time data. That's not to say that what scientists have said has not been credible. It is that actually the interpretation of what that means for the country is actually very difficult to make. And it comes back to this idea of, I mentioned earlier, if the government's job is to manage the timeline of prosperity. I think the aim is for political leaders to be an antidote to this rather unlovely acronym VUCA, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, which is, of course, what we have been seeing over the past 12 months. Political leaders have demonstrated that making decisions in a very small group, a long way from where the action is actually happening, is probably not the best way to go about this. And if I think about the democratization of leadership that I mentioned earlier on, pushing the decision-making, the authority for decisions, as close to the problem as possible can work better. We have seen some pretty powerful performances at the local and at the regional level, and we've seen some quite challenging statements from mayors, for example, at the regional and at the local level, challenges to government, because they know that actually they know their patch better than politicians or indeed the civil servants could possibly do. So this idea of making a decision at the top, whatever that means, has been demonstrably less effective than diffusing and devolving that authority to where it actually might make a difference. And again, business has demonstrated this, because that democratization of leadership, decision-making, has been pushed to almost to the customer, and certainly to the customer-facing staff. And I think the public sector could learn quite a lot from that.
Well, I'm sure that if businesses feel that they have a moment to draw breath ahead of the new year, they'll be reflecting on their leadership lessons. And let's hope that our political masters do the same. We're going to have to leave it there, but it's been fascinating to talk to you. John Williams of the Leadership and Management Institute, thanks very much indeed for talking to us on The City View.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris.
Thanks for listening to The City View, the podcast from City AM in partnership with CMC Markets. Do join me again next week.
CMC Markets is one of the world's leading CFD and spread betting providers with more than three decades of experience. Trade with CMC and you're trading with experts. 79% of retail investor accounts lose money.